Okay, brethren, last week we began looking at the tongue, not physically looking at what waggles around in your mouth, but at the words that we use, the way that we speak. And the tongue is, as we hopefully saw, quite important. How we use it, and when we choose to use it. And of course, in some ways the danger is that we do use our tongues pretty much every day. Many times a day we're nearly always saying something. If not to other people, then some things we say to ourselves. Or occasionally people do shout at their radio or their television set. If they see something they don't like, they will let rip. It's so natural to us to just talk, to say things, to speak. And probably most of the time we don't even think about what we're saying too much. Just like breathing. We just breathe and breathe and you don't give it a thought. Sometimes we speak and speak and say things and don't give it much thought either. And yet our tongues have more impact on our lives than we probably realize, for good or for bad. And it's probably the case that too often we are just ignorant of its impact or just careless. And we don't always realize that our talking can bring good into our lives or can bring harm. And probably all of us need to be much more aware of the power or the influence of our words in our lives. And in many ways, if you think about it, speech is really a godly characteristic. It sort of separates us from the animal world. I mean, animals sort of communicate, you know, bark and howl and growl and whistle and whatnot. But only people and angels and, of course, a God actually hold conversations, can talk about concepts and ideas and situations and use tens of thousands of words. Very much a godlike ability to speak. And we should be paying probably much more attention to what we're saying, how we're saying it, when we're saying it, to whom we're saying it, including when we're talking to ourselves. Let's turn to Proverbs 18:21, which we looked at last week. Proverbs chapter 18 and verse 21 gives a little summary, and I think we explored it and saw that it does seem to work. Proverbs 18 and verse 21 says, "Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruit." Now, the scripture says that death and life, or life and death, are in the power of the tongue. And yet, so many of us just use our tongues negligently, carelessly, thoughtlessly, and we don't realize that what we're saying can harm us. It can harm others. It can bring blessing and good. It can bring life. It can bring death. So if it is indeed the case, as scripture says, that death and life are in the power of the tongue, wouldn't it be important for us to be thinking about our tongues, our words, and what exactly it is we're saying many, many times a day? We can think of situations where, you know, parents have said things to their children, perhaps in temper, perhaps deliberately, which have often influenced that child through his life. "You'll never amount to anything good. You're just like your dad, just like your uncle. You'll be in jail, mark my words." Or, alternatively, "Wow, you're really bright, just like your uncle. I'll bet you're going to amount to something great, and I bet you'll end up in a very high position in this government." And child thinks, "Ooh, yeah, I guess I can." So sometimes the words spoken, either carelessly or deliberately, can affect a child for good or bad. And all of us need to be aware that in many, many situations, death and life are in the power of the tongue. And that being the case, we should be thinking about how we use our tongues at all times. Let's look at Matthew 12 and verses 36 to 37. We were here last week. A quick resume. Matthew 12, this is Jesus talking. Matthew 12 and beginning in verse 36. And Jesus points out, I say to you that for every idle word that men may speak, they will give account of it in the day of judgment. For by your words you'll be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. So we just think, well, actually, what I'm saying is really not very relevant. What I'm saying is just my business. What I'm saying has no influence. I'm just talking, just saying what I feel and think, just me blethering away here. Well, Jesus said, and I'm not going to disagree with him, that every idle word that we may speak, we'll give account of it in the day of judgment. And idle words could be unproductive, useless words, empty words. Now, how would you like to be called up, you know, today? And, you know, Jesus runs through a recording of a selection of our words over the years and says, well, this is what you were saying to your spouse, to your children, to your colleagues at work, to yourself. How did it sound? How did it play back? Words of encouragement, upbuilding, words of kindness, words of goodness, positive words, words that add value, or words of carping, criticism, judgment, condemnation, negative words, words of life, or words of death? How would it come across? Verse 37 says, by your words, you'll be justified. Or alternatively, if your words are the wrong sort of words, then by them, by your own words, you'll be condemned. So life and death, justification, condemnation from our words. So words in that sense are important. They are literally a matter of life and death. And looking at verses 34 and 35, it says, brood of vipers, this is to the Pharisees and so on, how can you, being evil, speak good things? The answer is they couldn't. These people were evil, their thoughts were evil, their hearts were evil, so they couldn't bring out good things, because what you speak, Jesus is about to tell us, gives away what's in your heart. How can you, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. A good man, out of the good treasure of his heart, brings forth good things in his speaking. And an evil man, out of the evil treasure of his heart, brings forth evil things by speaking. Now, what we say, particularly when we're not being really careful, gives away what's in our hearts. And what's there in abundance, you know, the good treasure of our hearts, that will come out. We often said, of the abundance of the heart, the mouth leaks. When you're not really paying too much attention, and perhaps your guard is down a little bit, it's a giveaway. And really what you and I are thinking about and focusing on, you can tell by what we say. If we listen long enough, you can see whether our hearts are positive. Our hearts are filled with good things, gratitude, positive, trust, and that comes out. Or if we're people who are mean-minded, petty, negative, that comes out too. The abundance of our heart, that's what produces the words that we speak. And Jesus says an evil person will just bring out words which are going to be negative, carping, critical, judgmental words, ultimately of death, or words of life. And by your words, you and I will be justified or condemned. And we saw last week, we won't turn there today, in Psalms 34, the psalmist says, if you desire life and good days and long days, keep your tongue from evil words. Let's turn now to Proverbs 29, verse 20. Proverbs 29, 20. So we do want to be careful of our words. And that's probably the biggest test we've all got, because it is something natural like breathing. We don't tend to give them much thought. If we think something, we just tend to say it. Now, we might occasionally be careful if we're in front of the boss or the judge over our alleged speeding or whatever it might be. We might be in that particular moment a bit careful. But most of the time, most of the day, most of the week, we just think and talk. Think and talk. Don't pay any real attention at all to what we're saying. But that can be sort of very dangerous, because death and life are in the power of the tongue. Verse here of 20, Proverbs 29, do you see a man hasty in his words? You know, speaks first, thinks afterwards. Has a thought, boom, out it comes. Not paying any regard at all to, is this the right time for me to be speaking? Are these the right words for me to speak? Are these the right people to whom I should be speaking? Nope. Got a thought, bang, and here it comes. Do you see a man hasty in his words? There is more hope for a fool than for him. It's destructive. This man, or could even be a woman, I suppose, hasty in her words, this person, male or female, is a disaster area, because they're not thinking about their words. They're not judging whether it's right to speak at this time. They've not realized that death and life are in the power of the tongue, and I need to be careful what I'm saying, to whom I'm saying it, when I'm saying it, including even, of course, to myself. So we don't want to be hasty, be slow to speak. Now, consider before speaking. And sometimes, we've said before, sometimes the vocabulary of silence is probably the best we can select. And it can be hard, I think we saw last week, to take back sometimes what we've said. It's like, you know, breaking an egg. Oh, I regret breaking the egg. Can't really undo that, can I? And sometimes we say things and then think, oh, well, I didn't really mean that, so I'll take it back. Can't always happen. A couple of examples we saw last week of foolish statements, perhaps one made in haste and people live to regret it, was ancient Israel. Remember, they had left Egypt on the way to the Promised Land, and they got right up to the borders, and the spies came back with their accounts of what they had found. A couple of guys said, fantastic, what a great country, let's go. And 10 of the spies said, ooh, wow, it's a dangerous country, and the guys that live there are big guys, thugs, giants. We will get massacred there. And they brought back what was called a bad report. And all the people believed this report, even though God had promised the land to them. And they said, well, why has God brought us out here to kill us in the wilderness? Oh, if only we had died in the wilderness. And they did. They got precisely what they said. They opened their mouths once too often. They were extremely hasty at that point. Oh God, why have you brought us out here? Oh, if only we had died in this wilderness. And they all did ultimately die in the wilderness. They got what they said. Death and life and the power of the tongue. Then again, we saw the illustration of David meeting Goliath. And you know, Goliath was a big guy as well. He was a big giant, fully armored, big sword, big shield. David was a youngster, teenager perhaps. All he had was a sling and a few stones. But what did David say? He didn't say, oh, this guy's a giant. I think I'll hide here behind the back of the armies and sneak back home tonight. Nobody might notice me. He said, who do you think you are, you loser? My God will deliver you into my hand today, and I'm going to chop your head off. And of course, mm-hmm. He did. David got what he said, because death and life are in the power of the tongue. And what we say is more important than probably most of us think. And then we saw in the book of James last week, that if you can control your tongue, You can control and direct your whole body and your whole life. It's not natural. A natural man can control and tame things like lions and tigers and gorillas and whatnot. But no natural man can control the tongue. But of course, people like you and me, who have God's Holy Spirit, we can. We can control our tongues. This at least is the theory. And also we saw last week, James said, you shouldn't find one person's tongue speaking out blessings and curses. You don't find fresh water and salt water coming from the same spring. That shouldn't happen. So how can you have a so-called Christian who says, thank you, God, bless you, God, praise you, God, honor you, God, and the same mouth turns around and says nasty things about fellow believers and the president? You shouldn't have curses and blessings from the same mouth. It's just totally not natural. And last week we looked at a couple of examples of where individuals blessed, that is to say, said with their mouth good words that brought about a good outcome, because the words that we use, well, death and life are in the power of our words. One was when Isaac blessed Jacob. Jacob had managed to sort of dress up as if he were his brother, and Isaac didn't realize that, and Isaac spoke words of blessing. May God bless you, may God prosper you, may God give you great lands and great wealth, and may God protect you, and may God honor you, and so on and so forth. And those weren't just nice words from an old man to his son. Those words actually conveyed blessings and prosperity and wealth to Jacob and his descendants. And of course, when Isaac found out moments later that he'd been deceived, he couldn't take it back. Sometimes you can't. Then we saw last week how Jesus was speaking, and mothers brought their little children for Jesus to bless. And of course the disciples kept shooing them away. Sorry, he's too busy. Don't disturb the master. And Jesus got slightly irate and said, you allow them to come to me. And he picked them up and he blessed them, said words over them. And that wasn't just a nice religious platitude. So you get a nice little picture in your Bibles or missals. That was Jesus doing something real. And I would imagine, I'll believe that the lives of those children afterwards were very different, because Jesus' words had the power of death and life. And Jesus spoke words of life over these little children, and their lives afterwards would have been somewhat different, because that's what blessing does. And of course, cursing, using words that devote to destruction or commit to harm, have an opposite effect. Let's look at Mark chapter 11, beginning in verses 12 through 14. Our words are more important than we probably think. Mark 11. I think we know this passage extremely well. We've been here a few thousand times at least. But picking up the story in Mark 11 and verse 12. Now the next day when they had come out from Bethany, Jesus was hungry. And seeing from afar a fig tree having leaves, he went to see if perhaps he would find something on it. When he came to it, he found nothing but leaves, for it was not the season for figs. In response, Jesus said to it, let no one eat fruit from you ever again. And his disciples heard it. So Jesus, the master, spoke to a tree, spoke to a bush. And you might say, never find me doing something like that. Which is, of course, why Jesus accomplished things that most of us don't. Because our words have the power of death and life. And here's Jesus using words of death. He's found this tree. It's, in a sense, a bit of a hypocritical tree. It's got leaves on it, which should indicate fruit available, but it didn't. So in some ways, it was a bit of an abomination of a tree. And Jesus spoke to it and said, that's it. you're out of here, you are dead. So he spoke words to it, and words of injury, harm, and words of death. And he spoke out loud. It says the disciples heard it. And they may have looked at each other and just thought, oops, here he goes again. But dropping down to verse 20, now in the morning, you know, a day later, as they passed by, they saw the fig tree dried up from the roots. And Peter, remembering, said to him, Rabbi, look, the fig tree which you cursed has withered away. You know, curse meaning to devote to destruction, to say words of harm and injury. And Jesus had said those words, and the tree had withered away. Jesus' words here were words of death. And so Jesus is going to teach these guys a lesson about how important, amongst other things, that words are. He says, verse 22, have faith in God, or have the faith of God, for assuredly I say to you, whoever says to this mountain, be removed and be cast into the sea, and does not doubt in his heart, but believes that those things he says will come to pass, he will have whatever he says. A lot of saying in that verse. Now, a lot of people would accept that, well, you know, Jesus could speak to the fig tree and command it to die, and it would, because Jesus is Jesus. Jesus is, after all, the Son of God. That's true. But notice Jesus didn't say here, yeah, pretty impressive lines, wasn't it? And only I can do things like that because I'm me. And that's the way most people sort of tend to read over these verses. Yeah, well, yeah, Jesus, a wonderful example of Jesus' unique power. But Jesus didn't say, yes, impressive, eh? He said, assuredly, or verily, verily, meaning truly, truly, which means this is going to be a surprising statement, guys, but listen up, because it's true. Now, you want to know it's true anyway, because I'm saying it, but because it's going to be a slightly challenging statement, I'm just telling you this is true. So, verily, verily, assuredly, I say to you, whoever says to this mountain, not just me, whoever, whoever, that's pretty open, whoever says to this mountain, be removed and be cast into the sea, and doesn't doubt in his heart, but believes that those things he says will come to pass, and he will have whatever he says. Whatever he says, or she says, of course. So Jesus is making it rather plain that this is not just something I can do. This is not just something that belongs to, you know, the Son of God, the Messiah. I'm telling you guys, truly, whoever speaks to a situation, you've just seen the fig tree, it could be a fig tree, even this mountain we're standing on. If you speak to it and believe that you have what you say, you'll have what you say. Any obstacle, speak to it, tell it to go. Don't doubt in your heart. Believe you'll have what you say, and you'll have what you say, but you do have to say. Now, many people, if they see an obstacle in their lives, something in the way, will ask, God to move this mountain. God, please move this mountain. Please move this obstacle. Please move this big impediment. Please, God, why won't you move it, God? And Jesus says here, actually, you speak to the mountain, and you speak to the mountain. Speak, speak, speak. Well, I can't speak to situations. I couldn't speak to a fig tree. I couldn't speak to a mountain. I couldn't speak to an obstacle, which, of course, is essentially why nothing ever changes. Because Jesus said, speak to your mountain. Whatever that big obstacle is in your life, speak to it. Believe you'll have what you are speaking, and you will have whatever you're speaking. Just like I did to the fig tree, You can do that. Whosoever can do that. And of course, in a sense, I'm pretty sure if you speak to something to go, you can also speak to something to come. Same sort of principle, I would imagine. And you'll find people often are actually following this principle without knowing it, but they're doing it carelessly, negligently, and usually negatively. Things like, well, I've heard that there are bird flu's in town. Just you watch. I'll be the first one to catch it, and I'll have it the longest. You know, what are you saying? Well, you're talking to a problem out there, and you're calling it to you. If you believe in your heart, you're going to get the bird flu, and you speak it, you'll get whatever you say. I'm going to get the bird flu. Now, you could say, I hear bird flu's in town. It won't come near me. No, no. I'm going to be strong and healthy. I'll not be affected by the bird flu. Bird flu, you stay away from this house. Oh, I couldn't do that because that just sounds weird. Well, Jesus said, whoever says to this mountain, be gone, and believes, will have what he says. Yeah, but I couldn't do that. Well, I guess in that case we miss out. Maybe it's a question of, oh, it's this recession. I mean, it's really affecting my business. I mean, there's rumors of redundancy. I guess, well, just you watch. I'll be the first one to lose my job. Well, death and life are in the power of the words. And if we're believing in our hearts, as Jesus said here, that I'm going to lose my job, and I say it, I'm going to have whatever I say. Or, well, of course, my dad died young, and it'll probably hit me too. It runs in the family, just you watch it. It always runs in our family. All us men in this family die young. Believe in your heart, say with your mouth, and what you say will come to pass. Well, that's what Jesus said. And of course, Israel out in the wilderness saying, if only we died here in the wilderness. God's brought us out to kill us here in the wilderness. They believed in their hearts, said it with their mouths, and they got just what they said. So what you and I believe in our hearts and say with our mouths, going to Jesus, that's a going to come to pass. So wouldn't that make it very important to be careful what we're saying? Whether it's the choice to say good things and talk to obstacles to move, or the very careless talking of situations and believing them, and in a sense bringing curses into our lives. Look at Matthew 21, verses 18 to 22. Matthew 21. This is the same situation, but Matthew's account of it. Beginning in verse 18. Now in the morning, as he returned to the city, he was hungry. And seeing a fig tree by the road, he came to it and found nothing on it but leaves, and said to it, let no fruit grow on you ever again. And immediately the fig tree withered away from the roots. So it took about a day to spot it above the ground level. But again, notice Jesus wasn't embarrassed to talk to a fig tree. Whereas most of us, it just feels like, you know, odd. It feels weird. How can you talk to, I mean, a tree can't hear you. How can you talk to a tree? How can I talk to, you know, my job? How can I talk, I mean, talk to people? Maybe talk to a dog or a cat, but you can't talk to a tree. That's just ridiculous. Well, Jesus talked to a tree and said, you're out of here. You've had it. You're dead. So he cursed the tree. Now when the disciples saw it, verse 20, they marveled, saying, well, how did the fig tree wither away so soon? So Jesus answered and said to them, assuredly I say to you, only I can do this because I am the Messiah. Well, he didn't, did he? And yet, bet your boots that that's what 99% of Bible reading believers think. Oh yeah, Jesus could do that because he was a Messiah. Well, Jesus said, assuredly, now Jesus doesn't tell lies, little white ones or big black ones. So he says, assuredly, meaning verily, meaning this is true. I say to you, if you have faith and do not doubt, you will not only do what was done to the fig tree. In other words, you can definitely curse the fig tree and it will die on you. He says, if you have faith and don't doubt, you will not only do that, but also, if you say to this mountain, be removed and be cast into the sea, it will be done. You can talk to the fig tree just like I did. That's what he says. It's in plain and red and white in my Bible. If you have faith and don't doubt, you will not only do what was done to the fig tree, exactly what I've done, guys, you can do too. But in addition, not only, if you say to this mountain, be removed and be cast into the sea, it will be done. And all things, whatever you ask in prayer, believing, you will receive. So, now, what could be a mountain? A big obstacle. I don't think Jesus is simply saying, well, you got two things you can do in this life, boys. You can talk to fig trees or mountains and nothing else. He's saying, well, you can do exactly what I did to the fig tree, even, in fact, something as big as this mountain, if it had to go, and you have faith, and speak to it, not, you know, shout up at God to move the mountain, but you speak to the mountain, and you'll have what you say. Now, your mountain in your life that you want to curse, which you want to devote to destruction, might be diabetes. Might be something in your life, think, well, I don't want diabetes in my life. I want that out of here. It's an obstacle, an impediment. Might be hearing loss. Might be eyesight problems. Might be a heart weakness. Might be some other infirmity. Some obstacle to your enjoying your life to the full as God intended, and it's in the way. Well, if you can speak to a fig tree and curse it to die, you can speak to diabetes or hearing loss or whatever it might be and tell it to go. But speak to it. And you say, well, I can't do that. Well, why not? And Jesus said, you can do what was done to the fig tree and even command a mountain to move. So who's your argument with? You know, Jesus. Let's look at Luke chapter 4, verses 38 and 39. Look at Luke. Or turn to Luke if you prefer. Look at Luke. And verses 38 and 39. I mean, this idea of speaking to things seems a bit sort of awkward. I'll confess it seems awkward, but I can't really argue with Jesus' words. They're fairly plain. And we do know from, you know, Proverbs 18 that death and life are in the power of the tongue. So it's not a great surprise that when we speak, that things can happen. So we're in Luke chapter 4. Verses 38 and 39. Now Jesus arose from the synagogue and entered Simon's house, that's Simon Peter, you know, Peter the fisherman. But Simon's wife's mother was sick with a high fever, and they made request of Jesus concerning her. So he stood over her and rebuked the fever, and it left her, and immediately she arose and served them. So Jesus rebuked the fever, that means, well, spoke to it, certainly, but spoke harsh words to it. You know, a rebuke, other translations are admonish, chide, order. So Jesus rebuked, spoke strongly to the fever to get out of here, go. Because death and life are in the power of the tongue, and Jesus is using his tongue, his words, to command the fever to go, and the fever got. That's consistent. Jesus spoke to a fig tree. Now, a fig tree is obviously a living sort of, you know, a plant, and a fever is whatever it is, and a mountain has got no ears, Jesus said, speak to a mountain, speak to a fig tree, you know, speak to a fever, and believe in your heart that you'll have what you say, and you'll have what you say. And Jesus spoke, rebuked the fever. He believed in his heart, and he had what he said. Didn't just look at Simon Peter's wife's mother, just to look at her and gaze. He spoke, fever, get out of here, go, right now, go. And boom, fever's gone. Oh yeah, Jesus can do that, but not me. Well, Jesus said, whosoever will say, even unto this mountain, get out of here, and won't doubt in his heart, but believe that what he says will come to pass, he'll have whatever he says. That's pretty open. Whoever will have whatever. It's not Jesus that's restricting these things. It's our ability to just accept Jesus' words for what they are without trying to, you know, turn the wine into water, trying to dilute what Jesus said. Well, I don't know about that. I mean, what, speak to diabetes? Well, Jesus just spoke to a fever and said, get. Let's turn to Luke chapter 8, verses 22-25. If Jesus was in many churches today, of course, he'd end up as an unbeliever. He'd be told, well, you can't do that now, Jesus. Well, that would never work. That's just extreme. That's foolishness. I mean, where'd you get these wild ideas, Jesus? But in chapter 8, verse 22, book of Luke. Now, it happened on a certain day that Jesus got into a boat with his disciples. And he said to them, let us go over to the other side of the lake. And they launched out. But as they sailed, he fell asleep. Yeah, Jesus was pretty busy, on the go, really, you know, all the time. Always crowds and multitudes and people demanding his attention, so non-stop, even little children. The disciples probably thought they were doing a good job of keeping their mothers away with little kids. But Jesus, no, let them through. You know, Jesus never turned people away in that sense. And he was probably, at times, pretty tired. You know, I think a lot of soldiers and military people who can be on call 24 hours a day, can be called to go marching in the middle of the night and so on, they often get to a point where they just take a nap anytime they can. It may be another 30, 40 hours before you get your next one. So a lot of soldiers, they know how to sort of catch 40 winks here and there. Jesus, I guess, likewise. You go, okay, we're in the boat, we're heading across, quiet at the moment, right, I'm out of here, a few minutes sleep. And a windstorm came down in the lake, and they were filling with water and were in jeopardy. So this is quite a severe windstorm. This is heavy waves, a lot of water coming into the boat. This is probably a rather tempest, and it says they're in jeopardy. It's actually in danger. Now these guys, many of them were professional fishermen, like Peter and his brothers. They knew the lake, and it's like, This is a bad one. This is a serious storm. This is a 10 out of 10 storm. And they came to Jesus and woke him, saying, Master, we are perishing. We're dying. I think one says, don't you care? Not a very wise thing to say. And he arose and rebuked the wind and the raging of the water. And they ceased. And there was a calm. So Jesus did what? He spoke. Only Jesus can do that. Well, no, Jesus said, what I've done to the fig tree, you can do. And even you can talk to this mountain and it will obey you. Jesus is doing what he's told them they can do. And here he rebukes, same as rebuking the fever, same word. He rebuked the wind. Wind! Calm down. No. Water, be still. And he spoke to the wind, and he spoke to the water. Oh, you never catch me doing that. Well, precisely. That's why Jesus achieved things. And why it would be embarrassing to speak to my eyes. It would be embarrassing to speak to whatever. because, I mean, just we don't do that sort of thing around here. No, we don't. But he said to them, really, where is your faith? And they were afraid and marveled, saying to one another, who can this be? For he commands even the winds and water, and they obey him. But Jesus had told them earlier, you know, if you say to a fig tree or to a mountain, it will obey you. And here he's saying, where's your faith? Why couldn't you have done this? What's your problem? And did you really think we're going to drown out there, guys? You know, would the Gospel of Luke have finished at chapter 8, you know, verse 24, with the drowning of the Messiah and his team? Not much faith there, was there, really? I think Jesus wasn't well pleased. So, you know, speak to things. And it's very easy for us to say, well, yeah, but that's Jesus, and he had the power of the Son of God. In a sense, of course, that's obviously true. But remember, Jesus said, verily, verily, whosoever says to this mountain or tree or storm or fever. So Jesus was only doing what Scripture talks about. Death and life are in the power of the tongue. Look at Matthew chapter 17 and verses 14 to 21. Matthew 17. I think even though Jesus knows people and knows human nature and knows human heart, at times he was frustrated by the hardness of heart, even of his own disciples, that they just couldn't seem to see what was so very obvious. You know, where's your faith? How could you possibly be panicking on this boat? What's the matter with you? And I think he... Like I say, he knew the human heart, but I guess when you come face to face with it, it's like, is it really so hard for these guys to understand? Are they really so slow to pick these things up? And probably today, in 2011/12, Jesus might be saying the same. How is it that these believers are so slow to believe? You know, how can they not see what's so plain? I've made it as plain as I can. Why can't they see this? Anyway, in chapter 17 of Matthew, and beginning of verse 14, and when they had come to the multitude, that's Jesus and his disciples, had just been up on a high mountain, and the what they call the transfiguration had taken place, where Jesus was sort of all glorified in their sight in a vision, and met up with Moses and Elijah. But this is a day or two later. They've come down the mountain, and a man came to Jesus, kneeling down to him and saying, Lord, have mercy on my son, for he is an epileptic and suffers severely. For he often falls into the fire and often into the water. So I brought him to your disciples, but they could not cure him. So this young boy, a young man, is epileptic, has these horrible fits, and thrashes around and foams at the mouth and extremely unpleasant. And he brought him to the disciples, but they could not cure him. And Jesus said, yes, that's because it's not always God's will to heal. And this is one of those cases when it's not. Go in peace. Well, you see, nowadays, if you go to a minister and you prayed for and you're not healed, well, I guess it wasn't God's will. That's what's often taught. Well, I guess it wasn't God's will. Because if it was, he'd have been healed. And since he wasn't, it isn't. Well, because we read on, we realize that actually that's not the situation at all. It is God's will to heal. Always God's will to heal. But of course we don't always receive it for various reasons. Then Jesus answered and said, oh, faithless and perverse generation, how long shall I be with you? How long can I put up with this? Bring him here to me. And really, he was, I think, a bit annoyed. And annoyed, I guess, mostly at his disciples. Not the man with his son, that was understandable. You know, the man had brought his son to the disciples, and they'd you know, danced around and shouted and prayed and cried and bawled and squalled, nothing had happened. Well, it wasn't God's will, I suppose. And the man's thinking, oh, wasn't God's will. He's no better, in fact, he's worse if anything. And Jesus said, bring him here. And Jesus rebuked the demon. And he came out of him. And the child was cured from that very hour. So Jesus did what he normally does, spoke, rebuked, chided, admonished, ordered the demon out, and out it went. But then, of course, the story continues, because now the disciples are thinking, well, what happened there? I mean, we've been casting out demons. Jesus, you know, gave us the power some time ago, and what went wrong? So verse 19, and the disciples came to Jesus privately, you know, a bit sheepish, and said, why could we not cast him out? And Jesus said, only I can do things like that, because I'm the Messiah. Now you see, it's not all what Jesus can do and nobody else can do. Jesus said, well, the reason is because of your unbelief. So these were believers with unbelief. For assuredly I say to you, you know, the unbelief in a sense, I mean, I can understand it. I think most of us would be in a very similar, if not identical, boat. But I suspect up to this moment in time, when they'd rebuked demons, then probably, this is my surmise, that the demons had just gone. And that the individual had been just healed, sort of quietly. But in this particular case, other gospel being out and Mark and so on, when they first tried it, this young man went into severe convulsions, you know, threshing around on the floor, foaming at the mouth, screaming, going as stiff as a two before. And really, when they saw that, I'm afraid their five physical senses took over and the unbelief flooded in. So rather than operating in 100% faith, when it didn't happen immediately and the demon tore this young man, and it was a sort of a horrific, and you know, sort of, you just see this guy thrashing around and you know, kicking, screaming, eyes popping, foam coming out of his mouth, and they just thought, oh, look at that. And you know, your five senses, what you see and you hear and smell and you taste and touch and so on, and they just lost it. So their unbelief was too powerful. And Jesus said, because of your unbelief, that's why it didn't happen, not God's will, because of your unbelief. That's why Jesus said it was a faithless and perverse generation. They had chickened out in the face of what was just a horrible, you know, visual experience. But then continuing, for assuredly I say to you, in case you need any reminding, boys, if you have faith even as a little tiny mustard seed, you will say to this mountain, move from here to there, and it will move, and nothing will be impossible for you. You don't need much faith, but equally you don't need any unbelief, and even a little tiny bit of faith, and you speak to a mountain, and it will move. But you have to speak to it, because that's how, you know, faith is demonstrated. It's activated by speaking, because our words are powerful. Things happen when we speak. And if we're careless with our speaking, we can bring problems on, just as much as if we're careful, we can make problems disappear. And all of us need to be much more aware of what we're saying, whether we're building up situations or tearing them down, words of faith or words of doubt. You know, you can say things like, well, with God's help, I'm going to accomplish this. That's a word of faith. That's positive. That's building up. Where you can say, no point in trying. It'll never work for me. Actually, you're right. It will never work for you, because you'll get what you say. And just finishing off verse 21. However, this kind does not go out except by prayer and fasting, which some people think applies to this kind of demon. No. It's this kind of unbelief. It requires time spent with God to the point where you aren't affected by what you see and hear. If you have got a, I think the King James talks of a lunatic, I think the Greek actually does refer to the moon, because always been that suspicion that when the moon's full, weirdos come out and about, lunatics, and you know, if you see something really horrific in front of you, you've got to be quite a strong person in faith not to be influenced by what you see, what you hear. And that type of unbelief requires good time spent with God in prayer and fasting to become much more, I guess, spiritual in our thinking. But moving on now to Luke chapter 17 and verses 5 and 6. So Luke 17. But notice there, Jesus was saying, look, the tiniest bit of faith, no unbelief, and you can speak to a mountain, tell it to move from here to there, and it will obey you. Now, was Jesus talking complete nonsense? Just thinking, well, I think at the moment the you know, the sort of book of Matthew is a bit short. I need to make a few more important sayings that can be sort of included in it to make it a bit more pages. Well, Jesus meant what he said. If you have faith and don't doubt, don't have unbelief, then you can speak to a mountain and it'll move. Chapter 17 of Luke in verses 5 and 6. The apostles said to the Lord, increase our faith. And Jesus didn't actually answer them. He said, as a different question, I suppose, if you have faith as a mustard seed, you can say to this mulberry tree, be pulled up by the roots and be planted in the sea, and it would obey you. So again, he's saying, if you have faith, even a tiny bit of faith, and hopefully absent unbelief, if you have faith, you can say. Or one translation says, if you have faith, you would say to this mulberry tree, or other translations talk of a sycamine tree, be pulled up by the roots and be planted over there, and it would obey you. And again, notice, by the way, it says, if you, not talking about me, Jesus, Messiah, Son of God, all that stuff, you all accept what I can do. I'm telling you that you can do this. If you have faith, you can say, speak to this, what, speak to a tree? Well, I'd never do that. Well, maybe we'd better be doing that. It was a fig tree earlier. It was speaking to a fever. It was speaking to the wind. It was speaking to the waves. And Jesus said you could speak to a mountain. Now he says you could speak to this mulberry tree or sycamine tree and tell it to be pulled up by the roots and be planted over there, and it would obey you. So, you know, faith is going to be expressed by our words and we'll do things. And you might be saying, well, I just don't see that. I don't believe that. I don't believe my words will make a difference. Well, guess what? It will work, just what you said. You believe nothing will happen. You say nothing will happen. It will work. You'll have nothing. It works both ways. So if you say, well, I can't see that. I don't believe that. It's never worked for me. I'll never speak to a tree. Nothing. If I did, nothing would happen. Well, what you believe in your heart, that it wouldn't work. And say with your mouth, it would never work. You'll get what you say. Nothing. Listen to Mark chapter 5. Verses 25 to 34, one of my favourite little episodes. I've been there for months, I've got withdrawal symptoms. But Mark chapter 5 is a great chapter. Honestly, it is a great chapter. And a great story. Well, two or three great stories, but Mark chapter 5 and verse 25, and the lady with the issue of blood. Now, a certain woman had a flow of blood for 12 years, which is an awfully long time. And I guess for women, you know, they can probably sympathize with that, but that's a long, it's a long, long time. I don't know what age she was when she started, 28, now she's 40, or maybe she was 40, now she's 52, but it's a long chunk of your life to be affected by this hemorrhaging. And has suffered many things from many physicians, as you tend to do. She had spent all she had and was no better, but rather grew worse. Also not particularly uncommon. When she heard about Jesus, she came behind him in the crowd and touched his garment, for she said, if only I may touch his clothes, I shall be made well. So here's a lady who said, if I can do that, I will be healed. I've heard of this this man out there. I've heard he's a famous anointed healer. I've heard he's possibly the Messiah. I know if I can get hold of his garments, I will be healed. That's what she said. That's what she believed, and what you believe in your heart and say with your mouth, you'll have what you say. That's what Jesus taught elsewhere. And she said, well, that's the case. Now, she could have sat at home and said, well, no point going out looking. If it's God's will, he'll bring Jesus to my door and he'll knock on the door and come in and heal me. Or no point going out looking because, you know, I've been taught at church that this illness is for God's glory and I'm going to die of it. Blessed be the Lord. The Lord gives and the Lord takes away and he's going to take me away. She could have said that. Or she could have said, well, I'll go and seek him out and then I'll touch his garments, and you never know. It might work or it might not, because as the scripture says, you just never know what God's going to do. But she said, I'm going out into the crowds, blood flowing or not. I'm going to find this guy, I'm going to grab his garment, and I'm going to be made well. Which is quite a statement of faith. Immediately when she did that, verse 29, the fountain of her blood was dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of the affliction. And Jesus, immediately knowing in himself that power had gone out of him, turned around in the crowd and said, who touched my clothes? His disciples said, sorry? There's hundreds here, and you say, who touched me? Everybody's touching you, Jesus. And he looked round to see her who had done this thing, and the woman, fearing and trembling, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. So it wasn't Jesus who reached out and healed this person. It wasn't Jesus who focused, you know, his healing power and, you know, zoomed it into her. Jesus hadn't got a clue at this stage who'd done that. He knew somebody had done something. And he's looking around. People think, well, Jesus knows everything because he's God. No, he didn't know every single thing. He was a human being at this point. He said, some power's gone out of me. Who was that? And he's looking around and staring at the faces, and people are all looking at each other and wondering. The disciples are scratching their heads. Everybody's touching you, Jesus. What's this all about? And she said, Master, it was me. And he said to her, daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your affliction. Gave her a blessing. But it was her faith. It's important what you say. She got precisely what she said. And whilst we're in this chapter, since it's a great chapter, look at verse 21 through 24. Shame not to make the most of it. Now when Jesus had crossed over again by boat to the other side, a great multitude gathered to him, and he was by the sea. And behold, one of the rulers of the synagogue came, Jairus by name. And when he saw him, he fell at his feet. And we said before that you don't just fall at Jesus' feet if there's great, you know, crowds all around him. You have to fight to get there, push your way to the front. And Jairus was a man with a mission. His little daughter was ill, and he's going to get to this healer. So he pushed his way up there and fell at Jesus' feet and begged him earnestly, saying, my little daughter lies at the point of death. Come, lay your hands on her that she may be healed and she will live. Jesus, Lord, Master, please, come, lay your hands on my daughter and she will live. That's what Jairus believed. That's what Jairus said. Lay your hands on her, she'll be healed, she will live. And Jesus went with him, and a great multitude followed and thronged him. Then, of course, delay while this lady's sort of circumstances were all attended to. Verse 35. While he was still speaking to this lady, some came from the ruler of the synagogue's house who said, your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher any further? Too late. She's dead. Missed your chance. Why trouble the teacher any further? Now, as soon as Jesus heard the word, as soon as Jesus heard the word that was spoken, he said to the ruler of the synagogue, don't be afraid, only believe. Jesus interrupted before Jairus could say a word. because Jesus knows that words are important. Death and life are in the power of the tongue. The man's already said, come, lay your hand on my little daughter, and she will be healed, and she will live. That's a statement of faith. But of course, the situation's now changed. Now she's dead. Jairus could have said, oh no, we're too late. She's dead. I'll never see her smile again. Words that would have been words of death. Or he could have said, perhaps some bitterness, oh, why do we have to stop for that other woman? She's lived her whole life. While we're messing about with her, my little girl has died. Might even been angry. Or, well, Jesus, if you'd got here in time, I believe you would have healed her, but after all, no one can raise the dead. Now, you don't want to be hasty with your words. Don't blurt things out. So Jesus says straight away, hush, you said lay hands on her and she'll live. Keep believing. Don't change your words. Jairus, zip it. And thankfully, Jairus zipped it. We don't particularly know what he thought, but he said nothing. And Jesus did that for a reason. Immediately, Jesus heard the word. He said, Jairus, Jairus, don't be afraid. Jairus, Jairus, keep on believing. Right? Keep on believing. And then he permitted no one to follow him but Peter and James and John, the brother of James. He came to the house of the ruler of the synagogue and saw a tumult, an uproar, and those who wept and wailed loudly. When he came in, he said to them, why make this commotion and weep? The child is not dead, but sleeping. Jesus' words are different, aren't they? No, she's not dead. Oh, no, no, no. She's sleeping. And they laughed him to scorn. But when he had put them all out, because really you don't want negative, fearful people shouting out, you know, death and so on, because their words are influential too. And Jesus isn't having this lot around him when he's about to work a work of faith. And I think Mr. Armstrong mentioned once in one situation he was in that he, you know, pushed people out because they were just all making a moaning and groaning and so on. It's just too much, you know, words of death. It's an atmosphere of death. So anyway, Jesus threw them out, took the father and the mother of the child and those who were with him, entered where the child was lying. He took the child by the hand and said to her, now, hold on, you can't talk to a dead person, can you? I mean, the dead can't hear you. Why would you speak to a dead person? Why would you speak to a fig tree? Why speak to a mulberry tree? Why speak to the wind, the waves? Anyway, Talitha kumi, which is translated, little girl, I say to you, arise. And immediately the girl arose and walked, for she was 12 years of age, and they were overcome with great amazement. And he commanded them strictly that no one should know it, and said that something should be given her to eat. So, thankfully, Jairus didn't change his words. Thankfully, Jairus kept his mouth closed. Because sometimes the vocabulary of silence is best. If you said your piece, and you said your words of faith, then if the feelings change, as circumstances change, maybe best not to say anything other than that. You know, stick with it. Don't change. Look at Proverbs 13, verse 3. Proverbs chapter 13 and verse 3. So it is important to choose our words. Choose when to speak. Choose how to speak. Choose to whom to speak. And don't be hasty. Don't be rash. Oh, Jesus, we're too late. My little daughter's dead. I'll never see her again. Oh, why? Now, Jesus probably had a clue that might be about to happen. So, Jairus, don't fear. Keep on believing. Anyway, chapter 13 of Proverbs, verse 3. He who guards his mouth preserves his life. But he who opens wide his lips shall have destruction. It's simply enough. You and I have to guard our mouths, meaning control our tongues. And if we don't even think about it from morning till night, we just blab away. Whatever comes into our minds, blab, 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 negative, negative, negative. whinge, 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 carp, 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 complain, 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 murmur, murmur, murmur. Well, we've got to guard our mouth. He who guards his mouth preserves his own life. I guess you can think of lots of applications of that. But, you know, life and death are in the power of the tongue, so we need to guard our mouths, our tongues, if we want to enjoy life. But if you open wide your lips, then it's destruction and then death. Like God's Word translation says, whoever has a big mouth comes to ruin. Makes it fairly plain in modern vernacular. If you've got a big fat mouth, you're headed for ruin. So guard your mouth. Guard your tongue. Death and life are in the power of the tongue, so we can do good. We can build up, we can encourage, or we can tear down and destroy. It's our choice. But we have to think. Look at Proverbs 21, 23. Proverbs 21 and verse 23 says much the same thing. Whoever guards his mouth and tongue keeps his soul from troubles, or your life from troubles. If you guard your mouth and your tongue. And probably most of us would like to be, you know, kept from troubles. Don't want too much trouble, tribulation, strife and difficulty. Well, one way is guard your mouth. Guard your tongue. Meaning, you know, think. Think before, you know, talking. Engage the brain first. Don't be too fast. Don't be a man or woman hasty in the words. Hard to take them back. And talking words of destruction, words of death, words of injury, words of harm, words of that's going to go wrong. I wouldn't ever manage to do this. Why does it always happen to me? Look at Proverbs 15 and verse 28. Proverbs chapter 15 and verse 28. The heart of the righteous studies how to answer, but the mouth of the wicked just pours forth evil, just rushes out. But the righteous person studies. Other translations say ponders. In other words, what's the right answer here? What's the best way to deal with this situation? What words would be most appropriate? Studies or ponders. Another translation says meditates, you know, not just gonna instantly blah, 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 you know, and then think, oops, wasn't too wise, trouble, dug a hole, falling into it. The righteous person studies or ponders or reflects how to answer, but the wicked person just gushes forth, pours out, no concern, no recognition that death and life are in the power of the tongue. My words can lead to life. My words can lead to death or injury or harm to me personally or to those around me. So we got to guard our mouths. Look at Psalms 39:1. We were here last week. Psalms 39:1. David's in a predicament and being really quite provoked by various people, and he was getting really quite stirred up, and he wanted to say a few things. But David knew that death and life are in the power of the tongue, and it can do things. It can do things to me. It can do things to others. I need to be cautious, particularly when being provoked by really difficult people around me. And he says in verse 1, I said, I will guard my ways, lest I sin with my tongue. I will restrain my mouth with a muzzle while the wicked are before me. In our day and age, of course, the wicked might be co-workers or could be family, could be other church members, using wickedness in a fairly general sense, but you know what I mean. People who just agitate you, people who just annoy you, people who provoke you, either innocently or deliberately, but one way or another you're getting really fired up by these people and what they're saying and implying, and you're, when I give them a piece of my mind, I'll tell you what, they don't want a piece of your mind. And so David says, I will restrain my mouth with a muzzle. No words. Vocabulary of silence might be, you know, not exactly something you want to do, but just say nothing. Like Jairus, keep mum, count to 10, or maybe count to 1,000. Just watch it. Watch what we say. If we turn to Psalms 19 and 14, chapter 19, verse 14. And the psalmist here says to God in this prayer, and you and I should be able to say the same thing, let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer. Now, what does God make of our mouth and heart? Because we know the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. Now, it's pretty much implied here too. Let the words of my mouth, what I'm saying, be acceptable to you, God. Let the thoughts of my heart be acceptable to you, God. And of course, they're pretty much linked together. What you believe in abundance in your heart, you're likely to speak or leak. And so you and I should be a people who are real careful what we say. You know, we guard our mouth. We recognize that there are times to speak and times to remain silent. We recognize that there are things that we can say that will build up and encourage and comfort. There are things that we can say that will injure, harm, scar. The things we say to ourselves that will empower us or hold us back. There are things we can say to ourselves that will, you know, bring in difficult situations. We can talk to mountains to go. We can talk to mountains to come. And sometimes we're just so careless that we don't pay any attention at all, and we actually wreck our lives by what we say. Look finally at Colossians chapter 4, verses 5 and 6. Colossians chapter 4, you know, the huge amount of the Bible talks about our speech and what we say and our tongues and how it can build up or destroy and bring life and bring death. And yet here we are from day to day just paying much of the time almost no attention to our words. Just think, because we've got a tongue, that we can just wag it and say what we want in most situations, but that really is entirely wrong. You know, I'm speaking to a mountain to go. I'm speaking to a situation, well, I'll be the first to lose my job. Well, yeah, my dad and granddad both died in their 50s. I guess it'll happen to me too. I'm pretty sure in my own mind that some people have talked themselves to death. Anyway, Colossians 4, verses 5 and 6. Walk in wisdom towards those who are outside. So it's talking really to believers, how you conduct your life with those who are on the outside of God's church. Redeeming the time. Notice, let your speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer each one. Let your speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt. Good speech, right speech. I mean, you know, when you salt some food, if you don't have any salt, it's like bland, you know, tasteless. Put salt on it, oh, fantastic, just right. Oh, delicious, a delight to the tongue, pleasant and enjoyable. Too much salt is, yuck, where's the water? Not too much, not too little, and our speech should be gracious and seasoned with salt, just right. Our words are just right. Our speech is just appropriate, just about right. Now, the word salt in classical Greek writing apparently was often used to talk about wit or humor. And one translation says, let your speech always be with gracious charm, seasoned with the salt of wit, so that you will know the right answer to give in every case. We're talking here about somebody who's guarding his mouth or her mouth, not hasty to speak, recognizes that death and life are both in the power of the tongue, and their speech demonstrates they've got control of their tongue. They bridle their mouth, and their speech is gracious, charming. The salt of wit tastes really good to the hearer. You know, sometimes Christians get a reputation for being very negative. You know, always pointing out the problems, you know, running down society, their government, other people, education, endlessly carping about how bad things are, these stupid people that keep Christmas, bunch of morons. And on it goes. Negative, negative, whinge, whinge, whinge. Now, obviously there are serious problems in our societies, we're not hiding that, but it's not always best to be permanently running down everything to everyone. You know, think about what we're saying. Is it appropriate? What's the impact on us if we're carping, carping, carping? What's the impact on other people if we're criticizing, criticizing, criticizing? Now, sometimes we might need to, you know, correct somebody or a situation, but we choose our words as carefully as we can. Well, none of us is perfect, of course. But generally, in a normal conversation, our speech should be gracious. More likely to be known as a person who encourages, who builds up, who blesses, than somebody who's got a reputation for other ways. Negative, critical, fast to jump on and pull you down. And remember, all of us have got multiple opportunities every day to speak. Even if no one else is around, we're speaking to ourselves or our dog or our motor car. So we need to be very much aware. Watch out for our tongues and guard our mouths. And this particular message is entitled Choose Your Words Wisely. So I guess I'll finish by saying let's all choose our words wisely. Okay, brethren, with that we'll conclude today's Bible study.